This WBEZ podcast is supported by Invisible Wounds Foundation, committed to healing military members living with brain injuries suffered in service. Thousands of service members are living with traumatic and devastating brain injuries that we can't see. Join the mission by texting DUTY to 53555 to give, or learn more at invisiblewounds.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Garcia confirmed his decision after the filing period closed, and only his chief of staff, Patty Garcia, submitted enough signatures to run.
If you're not going to run, you don't get to choose your successor.
Hundreds of National Guard troops deployed to Chicago and Portland are being sent home.
As we said from the beginning, the Texas National Guard belongs in Texas.
But the Trump administration says its deportation blitz here continues.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. It's our weekly news recap. But wait, it's Thursday. Yeah, I can just hear you now. But I know tomorrow we have Mayor Johnson on the show. So we're breaking down the big stories of the week one day early. Be sure to tune in to Ask the Mayor tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. live on WBEZ. So what's on Chicago's radar this week? Well, the Texas National Guard has left. Some updates came from a court case regarding the ICE processing facility in Broadview. Plus, speaking of the mayor, a vote on his budget proposal did not go in his favor.
Many Cook County residents are reeling today from a whopping property tax bill that came out late.
A frustration that this weekend led to this bill burning.
I can tell you this, if you want to accelerate our headfirst dive into an economic death spiral, pass this head tax.
The corporate tax is in this budget. It will stay in this budget. Is that clear enough?
Now, before we get into the conversation, Sun-Times Opinion Pages editor and columnist Ramana Hussain, who's one of our panelists today, she joins me now in studio. Hey, Ramana.
Hey, how are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
You know what? I remember that it's been a while since you've been on the show. The last time you joined us, actually, you were on the editorial board for the Chicago Sun-Times. So what's that transition been like?
Yeah. I don't know if your listeners had known, but the Sun-Times does not have an editorial board anymore. We had buyouts at the Sun-Times in March, I think it was. And so we would do editorials as a team. And now there's not an editorial board anymore.
So what does the Opinion Pages editor do?
What I do is I look for op-eds. So we have a whole process of people turning, you know, people submitting op-eds.
So people at home, if they want to share their opinion, what do you look for then in one of those letters to the editor?
So we have opinion pages and letters to the editor, and I do my column once a week, the third week, the third Sunday of the month. And then I'm looking for, you know, a lot of people are very talented and smart. We have a lot of professors that write to us, too. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for things that are, you know, accessible to people and that make sense. I try to look for topics that are, you know, have to do with Chicago. I'm running an op-ed on, I think on Monday. Yeah, it's about ShotSpotter, and it's from a University of Chicago professor. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about how, you know, technology is changing, and the ShotSpotter saga kind of reflects how the city needs to change how it deals with technology companies.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, that's something that's very timely. Yeah. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I had a letter from a lot of clergy. And they talked about how they want the Pope to come to Chicago to talk about the immigration raids. And they were saying, like, you know, when the Pope comes here, he could galvanize a lot of people, a lot of Americans, because people listen to him. And they had a longer op-ed. And I'm like, you know what? This will be great as a letter to the editor. And it did well. Like,
right.
You know, it was like, I mean, I use it as a lead letter. Mm. So even with letters and op-eds, I always look for clarity. Sometimes I look for things that are, like, you know, funny. Mm-hmm. Try to mix it up. So when I do letters, I try to look for the serious. I try to look for different topics.
Right.
I try to look for things that are humorous. And a lot of times you don't have to be, like, one of the things I try to tell people is, like, you don't have to be necessarily, like, scholarly to talk about things. Because sometimes people talk about issues and events. And it just, it's like when the average person's going to read this,
right?
It's just going to go over
their
heads.
Well, I'm glad you're making that distinction and you're making that clear. This is very interesting. Thank you so much for sitting down with me, Romana.
Well, thank you for having me.
This was enlightening. Our other panelists at the table were WBEZ City Government and Politics reporter Mariah Wolfel and Paris Schutz, political correspondent for Fox 32. We dove right into the drama over Mayor Johnson's budget at City Hall. And Mariah kicked things off.
So it was a drama-filled day of back and forth. And the funny thing is that Johnson was the one who pushed for this meeting in the first place. So when the mayor presents a budget in the city, that budget has to go through two committees, the Budget Committee and the Finance Committee, for a preliminary vote before it heads to the full city council for a vote. And Johnson and his team were pushing forward as of last week for a vote on his budget, which is very early in the season, especially for how controversial this budget is.
Right.
You know, we're all expecting to not see a vote until December, but Johnson stated early he wanted to see it before Thanksgiving and wrap this up. But this is a really tough budget year. The city's facing a nearly $1.2 billion gap. There's no easy ways to fill that. There's no, you know, consensus ways to fill that. And so that was a pretty optimistic deadline. And he pushed for this meeting. And by the time he realized he didn't have the votes, that his budget was not going to pass, he was trying to postpone that. He was using his allies to try to postpone the meeting. But by that time, the people who don't like his budget were very eager to vote it down and send a message to say, you've got to go back to the drawing board. And that's exactly what happened. The motion to, you know, postpone this vote failed on a tie vote, which, you know, fails to pass 18 to 18. And then the budget itself failed 10 to 25. There was a little bit of debate. I mean, they've debated this kind of ad nauseum over, you know, weeks of budget hearings. So it wasn't the lengthiest debate we've ever seen in the council. But yeah, there were some fireworks over this corporate head tax. And then Johnson held his presser
after. The biggest obstacle there, that corporate head tax. Remind us what it is again. He's trying to do what? As he says, tax the rich.
Yeah, so this proposal has changed a couple times. That was part of his mad dash over the weekend to try to get votes ahead of this meeting. Currently, where it stands, based on my understanding, is that this would be a $21 per employee monthly fee on companies with 100 or more employees. And one of the concessions over the weekend was that $18 million of that revenue, which it's supposed to generate $100 million in total, would go towards a small business grant to kind of, you know, appease some concerns that this will end up affecting smaller businesses than the mayor purports. Like, you know, a chain of restaurants that has multiple locations in Chicago that altogether has more than 100 employees. And so that proposal has changed a little bit, but that's where I think it stands now. He floated the idea of pushing it to 200 plus employees, which would raise that cap on which companies are affected.
But that didn't go too far.
So we'll just have to see where that ends up in the next few weeks.
So Paris, Mariah said there that even some of his allies voted down this budget. Shocked?
Yeah, well, I think the mayor's office is shocked, as Mariah said, they're the ones that pushed for votes, ostensibly because they thought they had the votes for the corporate head tax. But, you know, if we counted more than 20 taxes, fees and fines that were proposed to be raised in this budget, and it turned out they lost 25 to 10. So it sounds like an unforced error, kind of like a year ago when he had proposed a property tax hike, and that went down 50 to nothing. And so he is framing this now as, well, we either tax the billionaires and the big corporations, or we balance the budget on the backs of working families. But the alders opposed to that say that's a false choice. What we really need to do is adopt some of the recommendations in this report that the city paid for, the EY report, a consultant that the city paid for to come up with ways to streamline government. And they came up with up to $1.4 billion dollars worth of streamlined savings. But that doesn't mean that would all happen in 1 year. But these alders are saying adopt more of it.
Yeah, well, give us a list, because this vote on Monday wasn't just about the rejection of that corporate head tax we've been talking about.
So there's
a whole list of taxes.
Well, I read off on on the air, I had to take a deep breath and read off all of the
Boat
mooring tax and livery tax. But, you know, the big ones were the head tax and then the social media tax, which is still unclear whether it's legal, and then the cloud computing tax. And then there's something, the personal property lease tax, which is, it's very confusing thing. But that hits small businesses. That's if you lease property, you know, you're renting property. And that includes computer software for your business. You have to pay a tax on that. He was going to hike that a lot. That hits working people, you know?
Yeah.
And he didn't have an answer for that. So so it's not necessary. I agree with the alderman who say it's a false choice to say either we balance this on the back of working people or we tax the rich. There is a middle ground here.
Romana, how big of a setback do you think this was for the mayor?
I think it's a pretty big setback. And as Paris mentioned, this is almost like deja vu to like last year when his property tax plan was voted down, but that was like 50-0. I think also one of the things is, as someone who covered City Hall like in the 90s and, you know, just reading about Mayor Rahm Emanuel's budget, like, you know, Mayor Daley's budgets, Rahm Emanuel's budgets, it's like we were so used to a rubber stamp. So it just seems really significant just to see this happen like twice in a row. So yes. I still, it's a pretty big setback.
But I would say that's the silver lining here. Yeah. What Romana said is that you have a city council that actually wants to legislate now instead of be a rubber stamp. And that's democracy.
Yeah, exactly.
And from what I understand is they are going to come back with their own budget proposal. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen that. I've never seen city. It's usually the mayor. Here's the budget. Okay. Vote on it.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a setback for the mayor, but I think it's a win for democracy and the city of Chicago.
So you've already alluded there, Mariah, to the fact that the mayor's made a number of concessions in the budget. Anything else?
Yeah, so the corporate head tax was a big one. He also restored some funding that, peeved several different groups of people, including the domestic violence community. That funding was set to drop by 43% in the budget, largely because of expiring federal COVID-19 funding, but also some funding that was in the city's control. So he restored that. He restored some funding to the Chicago Public Libraries. And there's also this debate going on about how the city should tax congestion fees for ride shares, or how the city should charge for congestion fees for ride shares. And Johnson proposed moving from a flat rate to a percentage and expanding the area where you get charged for congestion beyond downtown. And so he kind of has to work with alders on that because, you know, everyone has opinions about how their residents will be affected by ride share. And that's going to be a changing proposal as well.
Romana, the Sun-Times published a letter. This was from a Chicago librarian about the mayor's budget. Talk about her concerns.
Yeah, this is before Mariah just mentioned there was some money restored for the library budget. But this is a woman who is a librarian who lives in Hyde Park and was complaining about the budget being slashed by $5 million. Mm-hmm. And she was just basically saying that, you know, a lot more people are going to the library and checking out books. She said that the circulation rates have gone up about 20% since 2022. And so she was just mentioning, you know, there's more people going to the library. The city is ready to open its 82nd branch. And she's just saying and then I think this budget also eliminated 89 positions, I believe. So she's like, this is going to put more strain on staff and librarians. And she was just talking about how, you know, the libraries are so, you know, well used in the city. And, you know, just cutting the budget is just going to make things worse.
Right.
And she also mentioned that Chicago is like the second lowest, I guess, in terms of spending per resident of any of like the biggest libraries in the city. So it's not that we have that much money already that's being spent in the library. So she was talking about how cutting even just like $5 million can make such a difference.
A huge difference. Paris, alders rejected revenue generators that the mayor was proposing. So what are the next steps then for this budget? Where do we go from here?
Well, the mayor asked for a pause on voting now. He wanted it, you know, to be done by Thanksgiving so we could go to Turkey Day and have a nice dinner. And now it's not going to be resolved and people might debate this. But, you know, what's very interesting here is what's happening behind the scenes and the different groups that are spending money, the outside groups here that are trying to influence this whole process. Because on one side, you've got the mayor's allies led by the Chicago Teachers Union spending money on a campaign to promote his budget and his agenda and his taxes. On the other side, and really this is what drove, I think, this vote here, you've got the business community and business adjacent groups that really kind of organized and influenced Alders, you know, and persuaded them on the head tax, saying this is a bad idea. Groups like the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club and the Civic Federation, they were very active in trying to shut this down. So you've got the it is coming down to like business versus public employee labor in these political campaigns to influence it. So what's next? As I said, the Alders are going to present their own proposal. The mayor has, you know, said he's open, but you know he wants to stick with that head tax. So we're going to see more sausage making, and they have to have a budget by the end of the year.
Well, the question too, Mariah, what do you think Mayor Johnson's going to have to do to get the votes he needs?
Yeah, I mean, I think Johnson came out really hard after this vote on Monday, saying, I will veto any budget that has a property tax increase. I will veto any budget that has a garbage collection fee. I will veto any budget that has a grocery tax. I will veto any budget that reduces police department spending. And he said that because, you know, his administration claims that any more cuts to the budget will result in public safety positions being cut, which his critics, you know, are calling his bluff on. But I think that none of those things are going to really be viable. I don't think he can just say, I'm going to veto this budget, I'm going to veto that budget. And you can ask him tomorrow what he's willing to concede on. But there are going to have to be some concessions. I think we're going to see changes to the corporate head tax. I don't think he's ready to drop that quite yet. And Alders, you know, who oppose it, say that they're not willing to vote for a budget with a head tax. But, you know, if Johnson, you know, implements some of these savings from the Ernst & Young report, some more savings, you know, changes the way city, you know, contracts with different companies, they continue to call on that as a means for efficiencies. If he does some of those things, can we see a head tax that's a little bit smaller? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think that there's going to be end up being a budget with all of the things that, you know, potentially a mix of things that Johnson says he's opposed to, and same with council.
But I want to drill into that property tax discussion just a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
Because here's another headline from the week. Many Chicagoans opened up their mailboxes this week. They got sticker shock because the largest residential property tax bill took place in the last, 30 years? And we saw an eye-popping median increase of almost 17% impacting some of the most vulnerable residents.
It did. And Treasurer Maria Pappas from Cook County blamed a lot of that on the fact that property values are going down in the loop.
Right.
The loop is the piggy bank, you know, for the rest of the city. The property values are the most expensive, the big, tall buildings, and that's where you get the big property tax revenue. And there are a lot of vacancies, and so those properties are going down. So the money has to be made up somewhere, and that's hitting the residential folks. Now,
so, I mean, the money has to be made up somewhere. It's hitting black neighborhoods.
And it is.
It's
it
the
is.
South and West
it
sides.
It is. It's exact opposite of what Assessor KG wanted to do. And so the thing here is Mayor Johnson saying, well, I'm not going to put a property tax hike because of that in my budget. I'm not going to hit working people like that. But I think the problem with the messaging is that people don't necessarily delineate taxes. Taxes are taxes. And when you propose a budget that has 20 plus tax and fee and fine increases, I think the public looks at that and says, hey, you're trying to raise taxes and not cut.
Yeah.
And he's saying, no, I'm trying to not raise property taxes. And I don't know if the public really sees that nuance. You know, I think if you propose taxes are taxes. You know?
Yeah. And they're seeing a bill.
They're seeing a bill.
They're seeing more money come out of their wallets.
And then, you know, have Alderman Brendan Riley making the case, well, wait a second. So if you hit businesses, then that's going to make those loop property values go down even further and hit residential homeowners even more. So there's a lot of messaging here that where's the truth? I don't know. The public will have to decide that. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, the bottom line is it's a very difficult time fiscally and financially for Chicago. There's structural and here's the thing. You're MacGyvering together a budget this year only to have the same problem, if not worse, next year. So then what? You know, there's only so many tax fees and fines you can raise. There's got to be some kind of structural fix for the long term.
Big question. I can ask the mayor himself tomorrow right here on Ask the Mayor at 9 o'clock. Quickly, Mayor Brandon Johnson also says that someone tried to set fire to City Hall on Monday night. Oh. Now, we know that no injuries were reported in that, but there was damage to the building. So we're keeping an eye, of course, on the story as it develops.
But I think the U.S. attorney yesterday said that they believe the suspect, and that is the one they arrested in the loop burning, which I know we're going to get to.
WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Well, it looks like the federal immigration surge in Chicago is winding down for now. The Department of Homeland Security closed its command center at the North Suburban Great Lakes Naval Station, and Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino has left town and made his way to North Carolina. Some 200 Texas National Guard troops are also being sent home, though they were never fully deployed because of legal challenges. Paris, we're still waiting for a Supreme Court ruling on that, right?
Yeah. And so these Texas Supreme Court, it's Texas National Guard members,
right?
Not the Texas Supreme Court. That's a very different thing.
Totally
doing
different,
a different
conversation.
Job.
Now he's sending the Supreme Court.
Said, you know, who knows who's going to send next, but they're away from their families. They're away from their jobs just to sit on a base.
Doing nothing.
To do nothing for, I mean, that's what is the point of that? And so, yes, we're going to wait on the Supreme Court to decide whether the president can send, the National Guard against the governor's objections. And, you know, this is dealing with the Federal Posse Comitatus Act, which like pretty basically says you can't do that unless there's an insurrection, a rebellion, or something totally extreme like that, which there's no credible person could say that that's what's happening. Not at all. But, you know, this Supreme Court has been pretty unpredictable in some of the precedents that they've overturned here in favor of this current president. So nothing's a given. But, you know, the law would be pretty clearly say that, no, the governor is the commander of the National Guard. And if the governor doesn't call for the National Guard, you can't send them in.
Well, the governor, as we wait for that ruling, is saying the Trump administration continues to federalize National Guard troops. He said, quote, "This is about normalizing military forces in American cities." And I'm looking to you, Ramona, because I'm thinking back over the last 2 months of chaos here in this city. What are your thoughts on just how Illinois politicians handled this situation?
Well, I think it depends on who you ask, right? I think people who feel like what is happening is wrong or what, you know, has unfolded these last couple of months, I think they would say that Governor Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson have been saying the right things. They've been, you know, doing as much as they can legally. The governor was talking about the Illinois Accountability Commission. They're going to be taking down, you know, any sort of alleged wrongdoing by federal troops, like, you know, kind of keeping a record, any, you know, laws they broke. Of course, a lot of people would say they have many. And then, you know, we have Brandon Johnson, who created ice-free zones.
Right.
Where nobody, you know, the federal agents couldn't use, like, city property for any sort of action. So yeah, I would think that a lot of people would say that, you know, they said the right things, they're trying to do the right things that they could legally possible.
Right.
So
let's keep in mind, this is unprecedented, right?
Yes.
How many times did we hear that word?
Yes, exactly.
I've never had to deal with something like this
exactly.
before.
Exactly. So I think, like, at least locally and even nationally, I think it's, you know, elevated, you know, Governor Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson for those of us who believe that what is happening is wrong. There's definitely people who think, you know, that, you know, Donald Trump was doing the right thing and is getting rid of criminals. And, you know, so it depends on who you ask. But I think in terms of people who are against what's happening.
And I want to hear from all of you in just a second. But before I do that, I want to play a little bit of what Mayor Johnson had to say here. I mean, he said the withdrawal of these troops represents a, quote, unconditional surrender by Trump. Here's what else he said.
The Trump administration is wasting hundreds of millions of dollars
on National Guard deployments that never actually deploy. This is on top of the $40 billion that the Trump administration has sent to Argentina, while Americans are still dealing with the fallout of the gap in food assistance funding. The people of Chicago and Texas deserve a full accounting on how much taxpayer dollars were actually wasted on this political stunt.
So he's talking about all that money wasted. He says unconditional surrender. Is that really what happened?
Well, I don't know if he's maybe trying to poke the bear here with Trump, but I don't know if you want to do that. But because Trump makes his decisions, on whims like this, based on what someone just said. But speaking of your question of who stepped up, I don't know about the politicians, but who did step up was the legal community and and the immigrant groups in Chicago. They were hyper organized.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. They were ready for this. And this is
ordinary residents.
You've had some limits on the use of force because of these legal cases. Now, I don't know what the ultimate rulings are going to be, but think of what's been revealed, because of this. We have the fact that the vast majority of people rounded up were not violent criminals. Mm-hmm. That was revealed because of the legal challenges in the cases. We have the fact that the woman, Marimar Martinez, who was shot, it turns out there was not a convoy of 10 cars. She was not, threatening anyone with a weapon. And now they're saying in court that she didn't even ram them. Well, maybe she sideswiped them. So a lot of their lies and their misstatements are coming out and the scope of this. And there's some oversight now because there has been no oversight from DHS on what was happening. It's like the Wild West. So the legal challenges from the legal community in Chicago and the immigrant community, they have been super organized and ready for this.
Yeah. And what do we think, though, that these last 2 months have meant for Mayor Johnson and his reputation, not just here, but nationally? I don't know about you all, but I've been seeing him on all my feeds. Yeah. I'm seeing people from, celebrities to ordinary people who had no interest in what was happening in Chicago on a day to day have started following his accounts, and they're championing him in the comments like, oh, I wish he was my mayor, or, I didn't vote for him, but I love the way he's been handling this. I just feel like he's kind of out there as this shining star, when folks are seeing the press conferences and how he's been handling that. What do you think, Mariah?
Well, in some ways he is. For people who don't like what's going on with the federal government, Johnson has done a lot through the law department.
Right. He's been very firm, too.
Active litigation. He hasn't shied away from sticking it to Trump in press conferences, which people really like to see in these moments.
A lot of viral moments.
And Johnson, he grew up, he cut his teeth rallying crowds who really agreed with his policies. And translating that to office, he has struggled at times speaking to crowds who don't agree with him. And that is not his strong suit. Mm. But that's why he shines in this moment with Trump, where he knows he's speaking to an audience that is siding with Democrats as opposed to the president. And so he really does thrive in those moments. And this has been a bit of a buoy for him. He's trying to ride that buoy to passing a corporate head tax in the city and passing a progressive budget, the most progressive budget that he's introduced, saying that this is the moment to do it as Trump, cuts Medicaid, cuts SNAP benefits. We need to stand up as a city, create new revenue so that we can sustain these programs.
Right.
And I don't know that the Capitol will go that far. But it has been,
interesting to watch.
Been a positive moment for him.
Yeah, a lot of people have written in to the Sun-Times, too, Ramana, about how these immigration raids have just really impacted their communities. Share a few of them that stand out to you.
Yeah, sure. First of all, as Paris mentioned, the community is really rallying. I'm getting a lot of letters from people saying what you can do to support immigrants. People are saying, oh, let's get whistles so we can, alert people about what's happening, or if we see an ICE agent or a Border Patrol agent.
Right.
I've gotten some pretty funny letters when that, flower seller was detained. Someone's like, oh, I guess my allergies will be okay now, And so, people are making wisecracks like that. But to be honest, and I have to tell you, most of the letters I've been getting have been touching on this issue. And a lot of people are really upset with what's happening. And most of the letters are pretty heartbreaking, especially when it involves children whose parents have been detained or whose families have been separated.
Which we've seen a lot.
Yeah, I got a letter from a teacher in Little Village, and he was talking about, for years, children were scared to go outside because of gang activity. And he compared the ICE and Border Patrol agents to gang members. Mm. And he said, you know, children are scared to go outside and, you know, and he said a lot of people who came into his community were brought in from Texas and Florida, bussed in here. And so he's like, we started like all these programs to help these residents and new people who came from different parts of the country. And then all of a sudden, there are agents coming to take them away. So he was just saying, it's just crazy. And he described one student who's, he saw this student who was told, he was called to the principal office and told that his dad was detained. And this is the quote that he said after he was told this. His light was gone. He was colder, quieter, broken in a way no teenager should be.
Oh, geez.
So that was really heartbreaking. And I've also just ran an op-ed from pediatricians who are saying that a lot of parents are scared to bring their children in. They're scared to go outside. And so there was one doctor in Illinois who was talking about how a lot of people who have children who are ailing and are like terminally ill, mm-hmm. like their parents weren't even there when they took their last breath.
Even when terminally ill. Wow.
So, yeah, there's a lot of heartbreaking stories that I'm getting out there, especially letters that I'm getting, and especially when it involves children.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of good.
I can't believe I'm living through this.
It is.
This is a strange time.
And we see the immediate effects of all of this, the aggression and communities, tear gas on residential streets, but... Yeah, that just made me think of the long-term effects. I mean, you are kind of sowing an entire new generation that see a man or a woman in uniform and think, that is a threat to my family. That is scary.
Absolutely.
And that is one of the things that politicians and the mayor have brought up in this moment, is that any trust that has been rebuilt between the community and CPD, mm-hmm. because obviously there are pockets of Chicago that do not trust men in uniform already, including CPD. Mm-hmm. There are concerns that this is tarnishing that. And that's why, the city's mm-hmm. sanctuary laws are so important to certain people, that CPD is clear that it's not cooperating with immigration enforcement. But I think for many people, especially kids, like, that differentiation isn't always made.
Yeah. Paris, real quick, West Suburban Broadview, that mayor, Katrina Thompson, she's declared a civil emergency. Quickly tell us what that means and why she took the action.
Well, she took the action because she's concerned about the protesters and demonstrators that are coming in, mainly from out of town, that she fears are going to do things that are dangerous, whether they have some kind of munition or something that they're going to set off. And, you know, this kind of just underscores how difficult it's been for that community. That's a very, quiet, working class, largely African-American community that's had to deal with this chaos. Mm-hmm. Streets being closed, helicopters flying overhead. And she's like, well, when is this going to stop? So, she's obviously she's blamed this on DHS and these immigration activities, but also, pleaded with protesters, please respect the hours. We have residents here. Please respect the hours and the times, and please respect the community.
And inside the facility, at one point, we had more than 150 people being detained there. Where are we now, Romana?
We're at four, according to reports this week. Yeah, there was a hearing earlier this week in federal court, and an attorney for the government had mentioned that there were four. And I think last week, the MacArthur Justice Foundation and the ACLU had took a tour of the facility. They said about 20. So it's gone down. And this is in light of, a judge's order saying that the conditions need to improve.
Right. The House voted to admonish retiring Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia. What are the details of that?
Yeah, so this obviously came after Garcia's decision to step down or to announce his retirement last minute after his chief of staff was the only one to file petitions as a Democrat in the race. Basically, what critics have called a coronation, making it so that she's the only viable candidate in the race. And, this effort was led by a Democrat themselves who said that we need to call this out. We need to call out, playing politics, and the vote was 236 to 183. The Illinois reps that voted in favor to admonish Garcia are Eric Sorensen and Bill Foster.
Mm. Put in context for us what this means for his legacy, Garcia.
Well, he was, his legacy has been Harold Washington. He was a reformer. He was always known as a reformer. But at the same time, Representative Garcia built his own political machine. And he has operated here like a machine politician. And, you know, he said because his health issues and his wife is sick, and those things are all true.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just too coincidental that you do this at the very last minute that people can file. And oops, you know, your chief of staff just happened to have the petitions with a bunch of Garcia, Chuy Garcia's kind of like allies signing on. I just want to say the interesting thing about this is it's Chicago style politics now on the national stage, and the national folks that are, you know, witnessing this are like disgusted by it. Like I watched Jake Tapper on CNN be like, God, what the heck? I'm like, welcome to Chicago.
This
is what Walter Burnett just did in city council. This is what Dick Mell did several years ago when he got his daughter in there, Deb Mell. Like, this is going on every day in Chicago. Not that it's right, but now the nation is seeing this and they're like, ew, gross.
Well, I thought it was funny.
I guess we're just used to it and we're just like, oh, okay. But I don't think it's, I mean, it's, I think what people are doing is calling it out, but I don't know if it's going to really tarnish his reputation, like overall, like in the history books. I think just because of the history that's back there. I mean, I was reading something where it said that, you know, he was part of the Black Caucus. There was a time when there was barely any Latinos in government. So he's kind of seen as this like figure that kind of influenced a lot of younger, Latino politicians. So
right.
I don't
no
know.
Doubt. Yeah, so, there's no doubt. He led a movement.
Yeah.
I mean, he led a movement and certainly in the progressive world, I don't think that legacy will be tarnished.
Two more things I want to get to here. Pritzker, he went to Europe and he was up to something. What was he
just
up to?
Just a casual trip to see another Illinoisan.
Just vacationing.
Named Pope
Vatican.
Leo the 14th.
right.
And so the Cardinal Supich set that meeting up and they talked about immigration. And it's, you know, Pritzker says that the Pope was very aware of what was happening on the ground in Chicago and appreciative of the efforts of Chicagoans who were trying to protect the humanity and the dignity of immigrants. But, you know, so then like right around on the same day, the a minority shareholder in the White Sox also visits Pope Leo and gives him a jersey. And I was told that there was no coordination there. They didn't know each other was going to be there. But so this is Justin Ishbia, the guy that's going to become the majority owner of the White Sox at some point when Jerry Reinsdorf sets down. And he said, you know, we want you to come throw out the first pitch when we build a new stadium. He had to get the new stadium thing in there. When and wherever that new stadium is, we want you to come throw out the first pitch. And he says that the Pope was very hot to the idea. He loved the idea, but it almost kind of seems like Ishbia got some PR for himself here in the White Sox.
Interesting.
With the Pope.
We're not quite done with the Pritzkers just yet, Mariah. We've all been hearing, of course, on any national network about the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files, the emails. It turns out the governor's cousin, though, had some ties to the convicted sex offender.
Yeah, and this actually first came out in 2019. Thomas Pritzker, cousin to the governor, was mentioned in some court records about Jeffrey Epstein. But this new cache of emails, 20,000 pages of documents, reveal a friendly email back and forth relationship between Jeffrey Epstein and Thomas Pritzker, where they discussed current events, where they made plans to see each other. At one point, Thomas Pritzker said something like, looking for a time to catch up in New York. Epstein responded, I'm in Santa Fe for the next 2 weeks, come visit. Another message was something along the lines of, it was good to see you, please come more often. And Thomas Pritzker said, always fun. They also discussed current events, including, you know, about the Pritzker family itself. At one point in 2013, when Penny Pritzker was an Obama administration cabinet nominee, she was in hot water for understating her income by $80 million. And Epstein sent that article, a Washington Post article, to Pritzker. And Pritzker said, I clearly did something wrong in my last life to have to deal with this BS. And I warned her. And that was the nice to see you. Please come often. At one point, Epstein sent Pritzker an email with a subject line that included, nobody knows nobody in Chicago. And it was analysis of the Chicago way of politics. They set up, you know, several different meetings. Pritzker appeared on several nondescript lists that Epstein had.
They were friends. He was wrapped up. All right, I've heard enough.
You can read more online.
I've heard enough. WBEZ.org. Mariah's got a full story of all the emails. She's got all the tea. All right, now we have something to get to that's really disturbing. I got to talk about that brutal attack that I know you all heard about. Mm-hmm. It was on the Blue Line Monday night. That's where a 26-year-old woman was set on fire.
Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins tweeted last night, chiming in here. This was about the person of interest who's been taken into custody with terrorist charges. And the quote from Hopkins on X was, 71 arrests, convicted 13 times, walking free, awaiting yet another trial at the time of this horrific attack. Hopkins went on to blame Illinois Safety Act as well for allowing this suspect to be out on the streets. A lot of chatter since this has happened. People in shock. I mean, this is horrific, but does the alderman have a point when he says that?
He might have a point. I mean, I think anyone that looks at 71 arrests and said, why is this person out on the street? And there might be mental health issues here. Why isn't he in a mental health facility or incarcerated? And it's pretty unusual for the Department of Justice to step in a crime case like this. That usually this is left to CPD and the state's attorney. But the DOJ stepped in and said, you know, like, we had to step in because this guy is a guy that shouldn't have been on the street. And so if they're not going to, you know, if the local authorities aren't going to keep the law, we're going to do it. But you just have to wonder whether that's why, you know, they stepped in. And you look at that case in Charlotte where the woman was killed on the train, and Republicans in the Trump administration made a huge deal out of that. They really promoted that among their base.
Yeah.
And you just wonder if they're looking at that here, then that's why they took the case, to make an example of the Safety Act.
This might be
to
another,
scare people,
another
to say,
White House,
like,
talking point.
It very well could be. Or on a certain cable channel, you know, you might see that 24/7. I don't know.
I do agree with that analysis. I also think, like, it is not helpful to tweet, you know, that this is because of this so soon after these tragedies happen, because we don't know the facts of this case. We don't know if, you know, this was just a bad decision somewhere along the line. But to Paris's point, I think this is going to be a talking point, and this is going to be, you know, in the news for quite some time, as from both sides.
Well, and let's just clarify, the Safety Act doesn't mean everybody goes free.
Nope.
I mean, right. The judge still has discretion here for a wide variety of serious crimes to hold people in jail pre-trial. So we don't know that this, you know, the Safety Act said, well, the person that committed this gets to go free. That's not what the Safety Act does.
Right.
Certainly is a controversial law. And there's legitimate debate around it, but it does not mean that everybody just goes free.
What are you thinking, Ramona?
Yeah, and I'm someone who I used to work at as a criminal courts reporter at 26 and Cal for the Sun Times. So I was there for about 10 years, and I think that each case you have to really look into it. And the Safety Act is something that I've written about when we used to have an editorial board. And as Paris mentioned, it doesn't mean that everybody that commits a crime is just going to go free. There was a problem where a lot of people who were committing nonviolent crimes were being held on bail. So the system the criminal justice system has been flawed for a while.
And people accused of violent crimes were getting out because they
had
money.
Exactly. Yeah. And so so I think it's wrong to call out an act, because I've been seeing this also on social media. People, you know, whenever there's a crime that occurs, a violent crime, people all start talking about the Safety Act, and there's just so much misinformation there. So I think it's irresponsible to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Hopkins, as I mentioned, was talking about 71 arrests, 13 convictions. He's getting those numbers from WGN, it seems. However, our John Seidel and Frank Main are reporting arrested more than 40 times for the suspect. So anyway, I also want to note that Chicago police are saying this woman was hospitalized following the attack, and prosecutors yesterday said that she remains there with critical injuries. So again, at the root of this, someone is really badly hurt, and we're going to keep a close eye on
this. At the root
of
it is a heinous crime.
Of course.
And absolutely terrible. A victim that obviously everybody hopes will be okay.
All right. In other news, Illinois now has digital driver's licenses available for iPhones. Yay.
But I, from what I read, you can't really show that to police, right? That's not acceptable.
You can't. You still have to have the actual card. But
to the bouncer at the bar, Ramona, because I'm sure they card you, you know. So, here you go.
But hang on. We are now the largest state to offer mobile IDs, right? So this is a big deal. To Ramona's point, we're not going to be able to use the digital ID to drive.
The whole Steve Jobs presentation here with Alexei getting up on stage, the Secretary of State, and, you know, making this announcement, that was interesting.
I don't know. What's the point? That's still my question here.
I mean, I think and he's saying this is something people wanted, and so here we go. I've delivered.
Did they?
I don't know.
Who asked for this?
I mean, the thing is that, you know, we pay for everything with our phones now. Like, true. Even I'm doing tap and I'm really slow to adopt new technology. I got AirPods like last year. But that means sometimes you do forget your wallet places.
Yeah, that and is
like,
true. That
even
is true.
Just
yeah,
like, that's true. Like, I went to the hospital to see my friend's new baby this past weekend and I needed my ID. Mm. Luckily, I had my wallet, but like, yeah. Had I not, it is convenient in those ways.
Yeah, the Secretary of State, Alexei Janulia, says airports will be equipped to accept digital IDs for identification. I don't know how comfortable I'd be going to the airport with just this digital ID. I overpack.
Yeah, like, and you gotta have your real ID and your passport.
I'm like, got my social security card. I'm ready to go.
My Ontario health card. Oh boy! All right, so we are. Paris is staring at me, so I've got to get to this. We're more than halfway through the regular football season.
Oh,
the playoff picture is still taking shape, but I know that Chicago football fans they're feeling hopeful.
7-3. No one expected the Bears to be in first place at this point, and it's stunning the way they've won. Like these fluky last minute block a field goal, kick a winning field goal, and. So I think, you know, two things are true.
So they're doing well?
It's wonderful.
Bears?
They're doing well, and they are very well coached. But at the same time, they have not looked great in a lot of these games. The good news is if Caleb Williams and the offense puts it all together and the defense plays a little better, they're going to get some key players back from injury, then they're in wonderful position to win the division and go deep into the playoffs. But, you know, they have not beat – they have an easy schedule. They've beaten a lot of bad teams. They're going to start to play some good teams. This is where the rubber meets the road. Again, I think the Bears know that. Caleb Williams has said it. Coach Ben Johnson is that if you look at him, he's not happy with the way they've played. He's certainly thrilled with where they are, but like, so they know it. They know it. They need to get better if they want to beat good teams.
Okay. So we're still good with Caleb Williams, right? He's doing a good job. I mean, sometimes we've been a little bit upset with him.
I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure when you're the first pick in the draft and you're the quarterback and you're the wonder kid. But
he's in our good books.
But the way he's played when the game is on the line has been outstanding. It's been really great. There's still a lot of, I think during the middle of the game, some things that he needs to clean up, getting rid of the ball quicker, hitting some of those checkdowns, not just going for the home run. And he's going to do that. I think he's going to do that.
Here's the other thing. The Bears are playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers this Sunday. And Steelers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, who I think we all still associate with the Packers, broke his wrist, but may still play.
He's not sitting out on this one. He owns the Bears. Remember that he's the owner.
So you think he's going to play?
I still own you, he said after he scored a touchdown. I think he will. He's 24-5 against the Bears.
What is that going to mean for us?
Well, I think, you know, he knows how to play in Chicago. He loves playing in Chicago. He's had such great success. But he's always said he respects the town. He respects the fans. He knows it's a great sports city.
Yeah.
It's been a great rivalry, and I hope he does play. You want to beat the best.
Yeah.
Now, the Steelers are not the Packers of yore. This is a different team.
Right, true.
And he hasn't looked great either. But you want that rivalry out there if you're a fan. You don't want to face the backup.
True, true.
Here's my analysis for Sunday. I am making chili.
So am I.
It's going to go great with the game. I'm going to love it.
Love this. You heard it first from Mariah Wolfel of WBEZ. Well, this is our last recap for November, folks, because guess what? Next week, a lot of us are celebrating Thanksgiving. We're spending time with our family and friends. We're eating leftovers, hopefully, right? Right?
Yep. That's why I'm fasting for like 2 weeks so I can save room.
Gorge.
And not fit in my clothes anymore.
What are your Thanksgiving plans, Ramona?
I'm actually going to be hosting this year for my family. But that doesn't mean I'm cooking everything. We usually kind of divvy it up. Mm-hmm. But my mom always makes a turkey. And our stuffing is traditional, but it has a little Indian kick to it.
Nice.
So it's really good.
I love that.
So I'm very spoiled in that sense. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But you know, I was going to tell you, I'm running an op-ed from a dietitian on Wednesday, and she's saying it's okay to stuff your face on Thanksgiving because your body. It's like as long as you don't do it every day,
it's okay to do it.
It's okay when the button on your jacket is like about to burst and you have to go on TV.
get a bigger jacket.
So, Mariah, you're making chili for the game. Are you also making chili again?
No, I'm not cooking. I'm going to like 4 different Friendsgiving.
Love it.
Year,
that's the way you do it.
Yeah.
you crowd surf a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Mariah Wolfel of WBEZ, Paris Schutz of Fox 32, and Ramona Hussein of the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guffman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.